Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. This week, all the sport's been cancelled and Boris has finally told us all to stay indoors, so we thought we'd try and lighten the mood by talking about some of sport's most bizarre moments. This week, I'm once again joined by Chris, Will and Jack, so let's lighten the mood of the nation and settle down to the weird and wonderful of sport. Chris, kick us off with something about Japanese top league.
Yep, so Japan's leading rugby union league postponed all of their matches before everyone thought they would have to for coronavirus. And that was just 2 or 3 weeks before, but for a very different and weird reason. A player was arrested for an alleged positive drugs test for cocaine, and 2 weeks later all the games were suspended just for one player having that incident happen to them. So the top league issued a statement on the Monday after that player was arrested to confirm that the player from the Hino Red Dolphins, understood to be New Zealander Joel Everson, was arrested last week for alleged cocaine use. And the incident followed two more positive tests last year. And although matches across the country were due to be stopped for coronavirus just a matter of weeks later, they seemed to want to stop the whole league for the fact that just one player had this happen to them. So that one's a mysterious one for me. That makes no sense whatsoever.
So he had two positive tests previously.
Yeah.
Then this alleged one.
Yep.
And they're like,
Cancel all games. I know Japan are into their honour, but that's going a bit far.
Imagine if that Chinese swimmer, like, you know, after he's just been recently caught, and then the whole China just dies. Right, no more sport, lads.
Yeah, sorry, lads, no more swimming.
Imagine if it came out that, obviously, it was an alleged one, if he hadn't actually done anything this time. He decided in his head, I'm not going to do it again this time. And then go, no, we know what you're like. We're going to cancel the whole league.
It would have been quite interesting if this has happened in loads of other sports. Like you're saying, if it had happened in cycling after the first test, and if it had happened in athletics after the first test, God, those sports would never have recovered.
Are they in a better place even despite that, Chris? I don't know.
Well, that's the question.
Maybe the Japanese is their galaxy brainy over here with their elite doping strategy. Yeah. While we're floundering in the background, just letting them get away with it. Like, it's the very much do press-ups for one of you being punished kind of.
Yeah,
vibe, yeah, it's all of it? Your fault. Yeah. If one of you does it wrong, then you're all in the wrong. It's like, okay.
Exactly.
That's quite good. Speaking of the weird and wonderful then, Will, Kim and Dennis, what's going on here?
moving on from Japan and into the comedy gold that is North Korea. The ex basketball player Dennis Rodman of Chicago Bulls fame has formed and is very famous for having a close friendship with dictator Kim Jong-un. Mr. Rodman has been quoted as saying that Kim Jong-un is a great dad and he is a friend for life, which have drawn, understandably, huge criticism from large swathes of the American public. The U.S. Treasury Department is reportedly conducting an ongoing investigation into whether Mr. Rodman violated international sanctions by bringing Kim lavish gifts.
I mean, of any NBA player, it would have been Dennis Rodman, literally.
Yeah.
That is the funniest thing.
For somebody who completely doesn't know basketball, why?
He was very... Oh, what's the best way of explaining Dennis Rodman? That's the funniest thing.
Because... I would say, Tim, you've got to Google him and then you'll understand it all. Just see what the bloke looks like and you might understand.
See, I'm currently flicking through Wikipedia and Google images and there's some quite outstanding
amazing photos.
Hair.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. He was very out there in a lot of the things. Like, even playing, he got away with quite a lot. He was a very good player, don't get me wrong. Like, you wouldn't want to mess with him on the court.
Just try and imagine a Zlatan Ibrahimovic without any charm.
And not being, like, the best player in his position at the same time as well. Like, Zlatan was the best player, maybe.
An agricultural Zlatan on a basketball court.
Okay. with a like, an even more out there haircut. Yeah. Okay, I'm sort of feeling the vibe here. Interestingly, just beneath that, the people who searched for Dennis Rodman also searched for Carmen Electra.
Interesting.
Former spouse.
Oh, wow. He's done well there.
Yeah. Former spouse.
Yeah.
I can still congratulate him for that. Come on.
And will the other outstanding achievements of another Kim in North Korea?
Oh, yes, of course. So Kim Jong-un's late father, Kim Jong-il, is famous for being the world's best professional golfer. Interestingly, he is the only golfer to ever have scored 18 holes in one in a single round of golf. Of course, you can't verify it, but if he says it happens, I am willing to believe.
I'm sure the Koreans can verify it for him.
I think that's partially the problem. Wasn't it during the was it the 2014 World Cup where North Korea were in it and they played Portugal and they were absolutely battered like 7-1, and I think they claimed that they'd beaten the Portuguese.
Yeah.
I think it was that World Cup where they claimed they won.
Well, they didn't tell their country that, did they?
Yeah. Well, it was on the news that they had beaten Brazil and that sort of thing. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know, rogue strategies, but, you know, I suppose if you're... Anyway, let's not get into politics. I'm going to take my own one. This time we're going to the world of football or soccer. So, in their only ever World Cup appearance, Kuwait were put into a group with Czechoslovakia, France and England in the 1982 edition of the tournament. After drawing their first game with Czechoslovakia, Kuwait ended up playing France and were soon 4-1 down. But only after hearing a whistle from the stands. The players hesitated and conceded, thinking that the whistle had come from one of the officials. So to give a bit of context, Sheikh Fahad Al-Hamad Al-Sabah was not only one of the sheikhs, but he was the president of the Kuwaiti Football Association. And to say he was outraged by the decision to allow the goal would be a bit of an understatement. He went down to the pitch, withdrew the players, and then remonstrated with the referee for some time. Stunningly, the Ukrainian referee then decided that, in fact, the Kuwaiti sheikh was right, and then disallowed the goal. it was in vain, as they ended up losing 4-1 anyway, but I think that is the only time somebody from off the pitch has ever changed the ruling of a goal, and they weren't a referee or a manager or anything like that. So yeah, pretty spectacular. I'm not sure what he said to him, but it must have been pretty colourful, we'll put it that way.
Oh, goodness me. If you were a referee in today's Premier League, who would be the worst manager to give a decision against?
Oh, great.
The worst manager or worst world leader?
world leader is fun.
I think Boris would be too easy just to ignore, isn't it?
Yeah, Putin. Come over bumbling.
Putin? Yeah, I'd guarantee
Putin's a
good shot. You
wouldn't have a clue where you'd end up with Putin. You would just know you're dead. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Well, Putin's also like a black belt in judo as well, so he's got some actual prowess behind him.
We've all seen the photos of him topless, like riding a bear on Google. So,
but then we did see Boris Johnson take out Howard Webb in that charity football match,
and the rugby player, a little Japanese kid,
and the child, yeah.
Manager's an interesting one as well, though. I don't know who the scariest manager would be.
Oh, come on, it's got to be Jurgen Klopp, surely.
No.
Scariest?
No,
he's not
way.
Scary.
No, it's got to be
Nigel
Pearson.
6'4", animated German Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, but then he'd hug you afterwards, so it'd be absolutely
I'd just slowly rub his head and he'd be fine with me.
I'd go Nigel Pearson, mate. He's scary.
Yeah, Nigel Pearson is scary.
Did Vinnie Jones ever manage?
If he did, I definitely wouldn't argue with him.
Yeah.
Just run over
your
head by you.
I feel I could be over quite quickly, because it depends what kind of fight you want to get into. If you want to get into like a fight that ends quickly, then that's surely better for you, isn't it? But one that's drawn out and gets you quite injured, that's not great. Who's a dirty fighter? I reckon Pochettino's got a dirty fight in him.
Yeah.
He's just going to get you from behind.
He was a tough old player.
Well, then it definitely is Vinnie Jones if he was a manager.
Well, no, technically the headbutter would be Zidane, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Conte would try and blind you with his wig. Anyway, we'll move on. Chris, foot and mouth.
Yeah, so this isn't the first time that the Six Nations has had stuff affecting it. So back in 2001 in the Six Nations Championship, the tournament was affected by an outbreak of the highly infectious livestock disease foot and mouth in Britain. And as a consequence, there are restrictions on travel, and Ireland's three fixtures against the home nations were all postponed until September and October. England were on a flow when it was originally being played in February, and back when it came back to being played around again in September and October, and seemed to have lost their mojo a bit, and it ended up costing them the Grand Slam. They did still win the tournament, but missed out on the Grand Slam at the final hurdle, losing to Ireland in the final match in October. Hopefully the same thing doesn't happen to England again this time, and they can seal the victory of the Six Nations when we, well, if we do ever get back to playing again this year.
Was that title in the balance? It was England's to lose, wasn't it, then? But this one's very much sort of up in the air at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if England had already secured it, because they set new records in that tournament for points scored, tries scored and overall points difference. So something tells me I think they'd already sewn it up, but then just were desperate for that Grand Slam victory in the final game, and then cruelly got that taken away from them.
Okay.
I can't imagine the dressing room after that. Martin Johnson has been absolutely livid.
Yeah, there's a fair few characters in that dressing room I wouldn't like to see angry.
Do you agree with it coming back, like even when it's 3 months after or even longer sometimes?
Well, I think because of the revenue, as ever, money talks with this, and with the revenue that all of the nations get from it, from managing to have these games on, I think they'll find any possible way they can of getting
them on. I mean, it will be massive, especially the one that obviously has been, the few that have been cancelled for the coronavirus now. Italy have obviously lost two of their home games, and that revenue is going to be massive for them.
Exactly. So I think they will try and find any possible way they can of playing them, but it does completely throw off, as we're going to see in all sports, throw off the season of both club and international sport around the world.
And do you think as a fan, like, it kind of nullifies the excitement quite a bit?
It does seem to, doesn't it? Because everyone was G'd up for the Six Nations and they were enjoying getting into it, and it's just come to a bit of a limp end now. I think when it does come back round to it, depending on how everything else is going, I think everyone will get back into it. And I think because there's, this one was just Ireland's three fixtures against the home nations that were postponed, whereas there's more fixtures next time, I think there are more games for people to get into next time.
Yeah, so everyone still has a game.
Yeah, exactly. It might still feel like the second half of the tournament.
Yeah. We forgot about Paolo Di Canio, Roy Keane, and Diego Simeone.
Oh God,
Roy Keane.
How can we forget?
Oh my goodness.
I get the feeling with Roy Keane, though, he's very like, he's a lot of talk and no trousers.
All fart and no poo.
Oh yeah, good shout. Good shout.
I wouldn't want to say that to his face, though. I would like to clarify that.
I don't want to test that.
If he wants to come on and argue with us, then that's fine.
It's one way of getting someone to come and visit the podcast. Come on, Roy, we're calling you out, mate.
Now for 30 minutes of Tim being beaten to a pulp. More football. We're going to something a bit more recent now. It's the Bundesliga Hoffenheim versus Bayern game. In the midst of a thumping by Bayern against their German rivals Hoffenheim, it was 6-0 at the time, Bayern fans then unveiled a banner insulting one of Hoffenheim's major stakeholders, Dietmar Hopp. To provide some context, Hopp is a deeply unpopular figure in the German football landscape, as his investments have helped propel Hoffenheim to relative success they perhaps wouldn't have achieved without his financial backing. The players were immediately ordered off the pitch and down the tunnel, while some of the Bayern players then decided to remain and plead with the fans in the stands to remove the banner. And then even weirder after this, after about 20 minutes of delay, both the teams came back, but the competition was evidently over, as they essentially just passed the ball to one another, knocking the ball like a friendly kickabout in the park. This was bizarre for two reasons. The first one, you know, like, who cares? Some stinking rich guy who's the fans don't like, particularly because of the way the German football structure is set up. Like, okay, yeah, maybe don't protest against him with horrible banner, but equally, like, given the current football landscape with, you know, all the racist problems and whole nations being fined basically 20p for their fans shouting racist abuse for the whole game, the fact that this was such a swift and decisive action from the referee and the players to go off the pitch to something quite so minor seems like quite an odd hill for the teams to die on, and indeed the league, because now they've set a precedent for this. They've got to walk off every time that happens.
Do you think that's what they did, though? Do you think they thought, okay, we're going to go big with anything like that, and then thought, oh, okay, maybe this isn't as big of a deal as some of the other things that we've had, and now they've kind of...
I just think they just reacted to it. I think the ref just reacted to it, and it's just an odd one to
choose. Yeah, I agree. Like,
yeah, it wasn't... It probably wasn't like, right, the next slightly controversial thing that happens, we're going to walk off the pitch to make it a stand, because that's definitely not what they were thinking. But yeah, weird.
It's very weird.
Will, beach balls.
Beach balls. Beach balls and Pepe Reina. So in a Premier League match in 2009, Liverpool versus Sunderland, Pepe Reina was distracted by the presence of a beach ball on the field, diving towards to save the beach ball rather than Darren Bent's rather tame shot, which probably wouldn't have gone in otherwise.
That one is still painful, thank you, Will.
You say that, I think it's even more painful for you, Chris. Do you remind anyone what beach ball it was?
It was a Liverpool beach ball that our own fans had thrown onto the pitch. And as it tumbled, it was a very windy day. And as it tumbled all the way from the back of the stand, over the hoarding and then into the penalty area, into the 6-yard box, just as he shot, it then hits the beach ball. Pepe goes for the beach ball rather than the real ball. And the real ball goes into the back of the net.
I think we need to give credit to Darren Bent. He's a very good striker, so he may have actually aimed for the beach ball.
Yeah,
nine.
He deliberately hit the beach ball. Exactly.
He definitely thought about that one, Darren Bent.
My favourite thing to come out of that actually is the chase question, though. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a question that was on the ITV show where there was a woman that obviously hadn't seen the incident, and the three options that came up was one beach ball, one ice cream van and one something else, but she chose ice cream van as the ball hit an ice cream van instead of the beach ball, obviously got the question wrong. But that
maybe
was,
she just didn't know how big Liverpool were, and she just thought maybe being a kick around in the park, an ice cream van and gone in.
A rogue fan drove an ice cream van on.
It's like that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire question where it was like, which of these is the biggest for the 100 quid? And she picks elephant over the moon.
TV does funny things when you're under pressure, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in that chair. No. Chris, the two Erics.
Yes, so we start with the original mad Eric Cantona. Back on the 25th of January in 1995, he was involved in an incident which has definitely gone down in folklore. Attracted headlines at the time and controversy worldwide. In an away match against Crystal Palace, Cantona was sent off by the referee for kicking Palace defender Richard Shaw after Shaw had frustrated Cantona throughout the game by closely marking him and having him in his back pocket. As he was walking towards the tunnel, Cantona launched a Kung Fu style kick into the crowd, directed at Crystal Palace fan Matthew Simmons, a fan who had run down 11 rows of stairs to confront him and shout abuse at Cantona. Simmons was alleged to have used the words... I can't say that.
No, you can't.
The F word, back to France, you French B word. And Cantona followed the kick with a series of punches, and a length of ban from the game was regarded as inevitable after the incident. And it gets better. So once Cantona then went to appeal it in court for the criminal charge of assault on the 23rd of March, at the press conference called later, and in a very slow and deliberate manner, he then said, "When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you very much." And that is all he said.
Has anyone ever actually translated that? No. Like, has anyone worked out what he was trying to get at?
No. I still don't have a clue what he's on about.
Just say it again.
When the seagulls followed the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you very much.
To be honest, Chris, the thank you very much wasn't the bit that was throwing me.
was a very bizarre one.
Oh, I love that story. I think it's a watershed moment in the history of Manchester United, to be honest. What with Ferguson's defence of the player, which, you know, given Alex Ferguson's
history,
predilection for, you know, casting aside players who were who become unruly.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge moment for him. Yeah, that's
so then that as Tim,
the other Eric.
Yeah, as Tim alluded to in the original question, then another Eric more recently followed that up. That Eric being Eric Dyer, who climbed into the crowd at Tottenham Stadium following their FA Cup defeat to Norwich to angrily confront a fan who allegedly had been abusing his family in the stands. And straight after the game, Eric saw that, I think it was his brother, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, I think it was his brother who was having this confrontation with another Spurs supporter. And he then launched himself over several sets of seats to get up to the confrontation, only to be held back by the stewards at the game. I don't know if anything's actually come of it, Tim. What, has anything
No, changed? Nothing, nothing.
So Mourinho then kind of said after the game, oh, we think Eric Dyer did something that all professionals cannot do in these circumstances by going into the crowd, but it's difficult when somebody does insult you and your family, so it is understandable from a human level point of view.
He basically said, we can't do it, but we would do it.
Yeah, exactly. In a very Mourinho way.
Yeah. It was so the fundamental difference between these two instances, we'll call it the Eric incident, is that like one, the fan ran down the stairs, and the other one, the player ran up the stairs to go and confront them.
Yes.
Do you think you avoid a ban if you put in some physical effort, like actually going upstairs, but rather than just jumping once, rather marauding over some seats? Because he took them with grace. Like, I couldn't get up. I know over the seats with such sort of finesse.
At the end of a game as well, to look like like an Olympic hurdler going over the seats like that was impressive.
If only he ran like that for Spurs more.
Yeah, he wouldn't have had an issue to start with if he'd run properly in the game.
That's one of the things, though. So, like, in your opinion, don't get me wrong, Cantona's physically is worse, and Dyer's obviously, he hasn't actually had a physical fight, but obviously much harder. Technically, in respects, you could say Eric Dyer's is worse because he's actually gone into the fans. The fan has then come down to Eric Cantona, so you could kind of defend Cantona.
You could say Uar Cantona was a little bit unlucky. Was a little bit unlucky in that the stewards didn't stop him.
Yeah.
The only thing that means Eric's got away with it is that the stewards.
I don't. To be fair, I don't. I'm not sure Dyer's actually going up there to lamp the guy.
No.
I think he's up going up there to just sort
see
of prove a point.
Oh, okay.
We can't. We obviously don't know intentions.
Yeah,
but I think, you know, doing it in 1992 or whatever it was.
95.
Having a leap. Yeah, 95. Yeah, I wasn't listening clearly. and doing it now when obviously everyone's got their smartphones out. You'd think that even if you've got this rush of blood to your head, you're probably not going to lamp the guy who's just said your brother's not a very nice man or you're not a very nice man in front of your brother.
I don't know. I reckon if Eric could, if Cantona had made it all the way up those stairs, I reckon he would have.
he would have still done it because, as his statement said afterwards, he's got definitely got a screw loose. Whereas I think Eric Dyer's got a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I think Eric Dyer is actually pretty intelligent.
Yeah,
like if he looked like sort of 2015 Dyer with the like lovely long locks, he would we'd be less inclined to accuse him than current skinhead version of Dyer, who looks like he'd give you a good slash.
Probably was a better player then as well.
He definitely was. Oh, shame. Anyway, my turn now. We'll go to another England player, another controversial England player, but this time sending the team to glory. So after a tense 99 overs in the final of the ICC Cricket World Cup, England were left with 15 runs to win off the bowling of Trent Bolt. Two dot balls were then followed by a heave from Ben Stokes to deep mid-wicket, and then came this weird and wonderful moment. Desperately trying to make ground for the second precious run, Stokes dived for the crease. The ball, which had been thrown in from deep, struck his bat, deflecting off for four runs, plus the original two made legitimately, for a total of six runs. And there is absolutely no denying that essentially won England the World Cup. Like, I know there was a super over and all that sort of stuff afterwards, but without that happening, where, you know, if we were unlucky, then that second run wouldn't have counted, so we'd have got only one run off three balls and Stokes would have been out, or two runs off three balls with Was it Archer who he was with? I can't remember who was at the other end, but we weren't going to get those runs, basically. We weren't going to get another 13 runs to win or to draw. So, yeah. Because there was a lot of debate during it, wasn't there, about like whether he intentionally veered off course and all that kind of thing. And I think if you watch it carefully, he doesn't run in a straight line. He doesn't go the shortest route. He kind of runs
in the awkward way. Yeah,
yeah, it's awkward. Like I could see it being given both ways. Because it's out.
I don't think he's intentionally hit the ball. I think he's intentionally run awkwardly so that it's harder for the wicketkeeper or whoever the other fielder is to ground it. Obviously, it has hit the bat, and the ball has then obviously gone off to the field. But wasn't there controversy with one of the runs was a bit short as well?
I don't know.
But there was something else.
I was focusing on something else.
There definitely was controversy about something in the rules that no longer meant that could happen.
And the fact that the umpires should have known this, didn't do it, and they still gave it to England's way, and obviously the super over then came in and...
Well, that was controversial in itself, wasn't it? Because we had made more runs in the tournament or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that's why we only had to get that was
bizarre.
That was mental. So the Kiwis were effectively robbed twice.
Yeah, written in the stars.
Clearly somebody wanted us to win. Yeah, that was funny. That match was just weird.
Amazing.
Very stressful. Will, I've just got Randy Johnson bird, Will. So tell me about Randy Johnson's bird.
So on March 24th, 2001, during a spring training game against San Francisco, Randy Johnson struck down and killed a dove, which had got with his fastball, which had got mysteriously lost, I can only imagine, from wherever it was going.
It just fancied being taken out to the ball game.
Taken out by the ball game.
The play was later ruled as a no pitch, and it is the only time in MLB official history that has ever happened. that kind of incident has ever happened before, as you might expect.
I have often thought whenever birds are on the pitch, because you quite often see it in different sports, cricket quite a lot, even football or rugby, you see, I don't know, a stray pigeon or something at the other end of the field. What actually happens if that bird gets in the way? But if it's not written into the Major League Baseball rulebook, I doubt it's written into any other sports.
So in cricket, like I think this has come up, like this is me really dredging stuff from out the back of my brain. I think this is part of the reason why cricket, it's laws, not rules, because rules imply like, you know, certain criteria, whereas law doesn't so much. It's up for judgment. And I think what happened at some point was a batsman hit a ball and it was going for six, but it hit a bird and the fielder caught the ball.
Oh, wow.
He didn't catch the bird,
they caught the ball.
He took the lot.
And it's technically out because it hasn't
left the field.
Or was it out or not? I don't remember.
There's a bit of history with birds in any tennis. Like, I remember there's a tennis game where a ball got hit by a tennis player and the players all just stopped because this bird was just dead on the pitch. It's like... It's another reason why it's like, can we carry on playing? Or maybe not, probably not.
Jack no filter.
Yeah.
Well, there was... going a little bit off piece, there was this incident again in cricket where the player hit the ball for like in the air, and on this pitch there was just an oak tree at the side, and it got caught in the tree. And this was like in the 1800s or whatever when they first started playing cricket, and nobody could climb the tree because it was missing like roots lower down. So they had to go into the village, get a ladder to get the ball. And while this was all happening, the batsmen were just running between the wickets, and they ended up getting like 230 runs or something like that off one ball.
Is that a wicket?
Off one ball. No, I don't know, mate. This is one of those sort of hypothetical incidents that may or may not have happened.
Yeah,
and definitely
the
just
myths
been overblown.
And legends of old cricket.
Yeah, exactly. But I like to imagine it just like on some summer afternoon, these two guys just sprinting between the wicket, and a couple of guys running into some village with a sword. Just, has anyone got a ladder? Like,
there have been some really unusual animals in different events. As
I
well.
Was literally just saying.
Yeah, I remember a cat that ran on the field at Anfield during a Premier League game, and they couldn't get it off for ages. I think there have been cats at quite a few different events. There was one in the NFL.
Wasn't it The Hens with the Venkies at Blackburn?
Yeah, there were Hens on the pitch.
The bat in the Spurs basketball game where Manu Ginobili batted it down.
Yeah, and then, and frequently in the PGA Tour, there's always incidents down in Florida where there are alligators and stuff on the course.
Oh, of course. I was just thinking that, yeah.
I'm pretty sure this may not be like a natural an animal coming into fear, but there's a hockey team that used to throw squid or octopus onto the court to just like to get in the way and like distract the players on the pitch as like a riot sort of thing. I know it's not quite the same thing, but it's still weird. White animals always linked to this sort of thing. I'm just trying to find out what sport it was, but obviously this is a bit short notice.
Yeah, it's mainly dogs and cats, isn't it? Oh, of course, the bees. Do you remember the bees? This has happened a few times at like cricket games and stuff where the players have to hit the floor because the small bees has just rocked up. That was England-Sri Lanka in, I think, 2007 that happened. Rufus the Hawk at Wimbledon, apparently. Djokovic and Cole Schreiber in 2015 apparently got in the way. But, yeah, you just said about the bat and the bird. Cool, that's all the animals in sport I can find. So there we go, tick. right, we'll go to golf this time. Golf must have had its fair share of animals getting in the way. So at the 72nd hole of the 2010 PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, Dustin Johnson was in control to win his first major. He was leading by a stroke heading to the 18th hole, but unintentionally grounded his club in what he thought was a waste area, but was in fact a bunker. What he didn't realise was 6 years previously, officials at the course had reclassified the numerous sandy areas, in inverted commas, on the course as bunkers, even though they weren't cultivated bunkers in the traditional sense. It cost him two strokes and a subsequent playoff with eventual winner Martin Kamer and compatriot Bubba Watson. Right, they just were like, this floor is a bit too sandy to be normal floor, so you can't put your club on it. And that cost him, like, I don't know how many dollars, but more importantly, the first, like, important win of his career. I think I said major. I meant his first major win rather than first major win. But, yeah, that would irk me a bit.
It sounds like he could join the New Zealand team after the Cricket World Cup final and being absolutely disgusted and that fate has just gone against him in every way.
It's a bold move, Kat.
Well, that's one of the things. Like, golf is one of the weirdest things. It's like wherever the ball lays, you have to. They have really, really, really weird rules.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time where was it Sergio Garcia? One of the shots that he did, the ball landed in the tree, but it laid quite comfortably. So he climbed up the tree so that he didn't have to have a drop ball, and he played the shot out of the tree.
Yeah, golf. Golf is weird. It's too slow.
Yeah.
A good walk spoiled.
Good walks. Moving swiftly on. Chris, parachutes.
Yes, so a fairly interesting one. Back in, when was it? It was back in 1993, on November the 6th, a fight between Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield was taking place at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas. And in one of the most bizarre moments in sports history, parachutist James Fanman Miller, I love that he's named himself that, crashed into the ring during the second minute of round 7, causing a 21-minute delay of the fight. Miller was immediately pulled from the ropes into the crowd by security, and then from then on was attacked by both fans and security, beaten up, eventually being knocked unconscious by a member of Bowe's security team. And after a short hospital stay, Miller was then taken to the Clark County Detention Centre and charged with dangerous flying.
So, like, I just assumed that was he was an act that was poorly timed and poorly executed. But it just, so he was just a recreational fan, or no, clearly a professional fan man, who'd got waylaid and landed in this blinking boxing ring.
Of all the places you want to fall into, I don't think you want to fall into a boxing ring.
Well, if it wasn't intentional, that's got to be the worst day at the office, I think anybody
would. Imagine it being by accident and getting knocked out whilst being dragged out of the ring by fans. Like,
especially as your career is, like, in so intertwined into your name, like
the fan man.
Yeah. Oh my word, that's so funny. Like, if you were to be sort of seconds from accidentally falling into a sporting event, where could be worse? Like an MMA ring, maybe. But I suppose then you're a bit protected from the crowd.
Monster truck derby.
Yeah, monster truck. You would think that the crowd or even security would there be there to try and pull you out and then look after you, but instead they all just lay into him.
You've ruined my fight. Yeah. Like, because weirdly, the safest place to be would be WWE, wouldn't it?
Did you see the recent video of them actually showing one of their, I don't know what fights, but there was no fans, you know, obviously in the stadium because of this coronavirus. And someone was recording it, and obviously when the adverts went on, all the, do you call them, well, they are athletes, but I guess they're actors as well at the same time. Yeah. They just stopped and waited for the ad breaks to finish, and then they started again.
Time out.
It's such a real sport, though. It is on Sky Sports, so.
Hey, it's about the entertainment.
Obviously. And that is entertaining.
Will quickly distract us. Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding. Yes, of course. So, in the weeks leading up to the 1994 Olympics, an anonymous attacker assaulted... Lovely alliteration there. Thank you very much for myself. Assaulted the much-beloved Nancy Kerrigan, who was a champion American figure skater. The assailant was later identified as a hitman hired by Tonya Harding's husband, Jeff Galluli. It was never been proven that Harding knew anything about the attack, though she eventually received a lifetime ban after interfering in the investigation and the prosecution of the attack. So the hitman essentially broke Nancy Kerrigan's leg in several places. And yeah, if you see videos on it, she's obviously absolutely beside herself, distraught. That's a shot at Olympic gold. It's what you've been training your whole life for, so very, very sad. Although the American public did crucify Tonya Harding metaphorically, of course. That would have been a little bit too far.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen I, Tonya?
Yeah, I've seen the film.
Yeah, so you know about how they were never a fan of Tonya Harding in the first place,
no.
Because she didn't look the part.
Yeah,
she wasn't the nation's sweetheart like Kerrigan.
The nation's sweetheart.
It's quite hard to sell that sort of notion when it's Margot Robbie playing the character.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe if I was playing Tonya Harding, then
as an image, I don't want to.
Hey, you've seen me in tight spandex.
I do not want that. I do not want that image of you dancing on ice in tight spandex.
Well, anyway, on that note, that's the end of this week's Dugout Debate podcast. Thank you, Chris, Will and Jack. You can find us on Twitter and social media, etc., on @Dugout_Debate. We'll see you again soon. Hopefully everyone stays well and wash your hands.
Yep, just as one aside, I would implore everyone to send in their suggestions, because that was just a brief little list of things that we came up with.
Ditto. Thank you, chaps.
Thank you.